This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Daniel Bluestone is live in studio. He is the director of the Historic Preservation Program at the University of Virginia School of Architecture, a professor of architectural history, and an officially designated consultant regarding the natural historic resources in the path of the Meadow Creek Parkway. So we have a whole lot to talk about today, Dan. Welcome to the studio.
Great to be here, Coy. Coy, as you know, today is the 28th of May. It's actually Thursday, but that's the day.
I call it Little Friday.
I got you. Okay. this is the 149th anniversary of Paul Goodloe McIntyre's birth. And what was great about this is that back in 1942, on the 5th of January, Charlottesville City Council passed a resolution.
Now, this is big news because when you emailed this to me, I had never heard this. We'll break this news here. This is really interesting.
This is actually McIntyre Day. This is what the council said. They passed their resolution. They said, whereas by reason of the many wisely chosen and generous gifts of Paul Goodloe McIntyre, the citizens of the city of Charlottesville have enjoyed exceptional privileges in the fields of recreation, education, and aesthetics. And whereas it is fitting that this body, as the representatives of the people of the city, should make public expression of their gratitude to Mr. McIntyre and by public proclamation call upon the citizens to recognize their indebtedness to him. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Council of the City of Charlottesville that the 28th day of May, the anniversary of the birth of Mr. McIntyre, be, and it is hereby designated as McIntyre Day, to be observed throughout the city of Charlottesville as a special day for the expression of the profound feeling of goodwill and gratitude which Charlottesville and all of its citizens hold for Mr. McIntyre.
Wow. I mean, that's really something. That is really something. So this is 1942.
This is 1942, Coy, and I don't know
when. So the question we have, I guess, for everybody is, what the heck happened to...
When did this lapse? But the real issue is...
Where's McIntyre Day been?
We ought to bring back the celebration of McIntyre, you know, of McIntyre Day. You have, if you think about the profound shaping of this city, there's probably no single individual that's had a more profound impact. You have public monuments and memorials ranging from Sacagawea on West Main Street to Lee to Jackson.
All the big statues,
Clark, Lewis and Clark, and then park spaces, Washington Park, Lee Park, Jackson Park, McIntyre Park. You have departments at the university, they're endowed by him, the McIntyre School of Commerce, the Art History Department, the History Department. These are all institutions that are enduring institutions and really shape the life and the spaces of our community.
Yeah, so much of what we just take for granted as just regular old things about Charlottesville that make it special are actually his legacy.
Take those away, and you have a pretty uninteresting city, really. I mean, imagine our city without all of those things. People would notice it if you suddenly made those disappear overnight. And so what we're coming up on, Coy, is the sesquicentennial. The 150th anniversary will be this day next year. And I think we ought to start the planning and the organization for that to really recognize the 150th anniversary of McIntyre's birth. And I think the biggest thing we could do to express our gratitude is probably try to get to the 150th anniversary without a highway going through the main park.
Named for him.
Named for him. And to also remove the desecration of his name. We're naming that road as part of the segmentation, you know, of this single road. We call it McIntyre Road Extended. And you think, what a, it's not only ingratitude, but to try to defile his memory by naming this silly road after him is a problem.
We're talking with Daniel Bluestone at the University of Virginia School of Architecture. He's director of the Historic Preservation Program. Remind us first, a little bit of history, remind us who McIntyre was. Because we got a lot of new people to our community who have heard the name but don't know, you know, he's a local boy made good.
That's right. McIntyre was born and raised in Charlottesville and then went and had a seat on the Board of Trade in Chicago and then moved to and had a seat on the New York Stock Exchange. He was a broker, financial person. piled up a large fortune, and then came back. And the interesting thing is that he really, I think, absorbed the lessons of the City Beautiful movement, of statues, of grand embellished public spaces, brought those back to Charlottesville, and started applying them all over the map.
So he was seeing that happen in Manhattan as he was there.
That's right. Those main places. And when you think about it, Coy, if you want to go to the to McIntyre Park, it's really interesting. The small statues, the small parks in the city, Lee Park, the downtown parks, Jackson Park next to the courthouse, those are parks the size that this city could easily absorb. The issue is with McIntyre Park is this was a vision. I mean, but Charlottesville at this time had 10,000 people in the city. And all around the city, there was open rural agricultural land. And you sort of think, what was McIntyre thinking to establish such a big landscape park on the edge of the city? And I think in some ways, those were the cosmopolitan lessons he was absorbing from these larger metropolitan areas. New York and Chicago had a million plus population at this time. And so they understood that parks had a role as the lungs of the city, as nature preserves that otherwise people wouldn't have access to. In Charlottesville, people had access to that, but it's almost McIntyre had this vision that this was part of the cosmopolitan character of any decent city. And so maybe we'll plan for the future. But, you know, little old Charlottesville at that time got this incredible landscape park.
Yeah. See, he was sort of really looking way down the road. He envisioned this big urban center in central Virginia and knew one day they're going to need this big park.
It was farsighted and foresighted, or it was just being done that this is what any decent city, decent-sized city needed, was, well, a big park. And so we'll do that regardless of whether Charlottesville needs the lungs of the city or not. Now,
Central Park was still a relatively new thing when he was in Manhattan, right?
Well, Central Park was established in the Central Park was established in the 1850s. And the thing about Central Park that's so interesting, and again comes up in this issue of McIntyre Park and the development of that, is Central Park had major cross streets that carried the heavy traffic of that park. And they were suppressed below the surface of the park. So you can be in Central Park, there can be hundreds, thousands of taxi cabs crossing the park, and they don't intrude on your appreciation or connection to the park. And that day, it was wagons and horse-drawn carriages. You wouldn't see the business traffic of the city because it was below the level of the park. The way we've designed McIntyre Meadow Creek Parkway is we're going to put the roadway up on a berm, and then the parkland that we've added to compensate for destroying McIntyre Park is down in the lowlands. And so we're going to end up with this scenario whereby you will not be able to be in that park without an awareness of automobile traffic.
It'll be a sham. Like up on a stage going through the park.
Absolutely. And it will be in your view shed, in your sound shed. It totally inverts the precedent of Olmsted's design for Central Park.
We're talking with Daniel Bluestone of the University of Virginia, director of the Historic Preservation Program. Tell us a little bit more about McIntyre came back to Charlottesville and just started spending money on this city.
He came back in the 19-teens, and his first projects were these major park. Lee Park was actually a memorial to his parents with the equestrian statue of General Lee that was dedicated in the 1920s. Jackson Park as well. In the teens and 20s, he also established Charlottesville's first public library, which is now the Charlottesville Albemarle Historical Society, the home facing onto Lee Park. And so he, you know, had this sense of city building and a historical memory that would be celebrated in the spaces of the city through these statues. And I think, you know, he really had, again, just this very cosmopolitan vision of a beautiful city, of a city that had historic memory, and that had a grand public realm. And that's what these parks were about, was establishing a public realm for the people of the city of Charlottesville. And the key thing is,
he wasn't setting aside land for a future highway.
He was not. And the key thing, in fact, is the deed that when he gave the land for McIntyre Park to the city, it said that this would be established as a park and playground in perpetuity for the people of Charlottesville.
Now, that's legal language.
That's legal language, and I still think the jury's going to be out on this. I think that we get this in front of a judge who knows about how bequests and gifts to the public are supposed to be protected over the years, and I think there's a real issue of whether or not we've subverted McIntyre's aims and his goals and vision when he gave a grant of that land. Maybe that land should be reverting to the heirs of the McIntyre estate because it's not being used for the purpose that he dedicated.
It's being misused.
Misused.
Yeah. And this, of course, for folks who are just joining us, this road through McIntyre Park goes back to the 1960s, and it was a deal with VDOT, basically. We'll give you an exit off of this new highway, Interstate 64, heading west over the mountains, right there conveniently with a straight shot downtown, as long as you build a four-lane road from that all the way up to 29. That was right. The idea, to help traffic get from that interchange off of what's now 5th Street all the way up to 29. And they did a little bit of that, which is why 5th Street Extended has four lanes and looks like right. a mini highway. And then as it gets into downtown, it all of a sudden becomes like a little, you know, neighborhood street. And then it went through. Vinegar Hill was raised for that purpose, so right. that they could put that highway through there.
Yeah.
But then it butted up right against McIntyre Park. And since day one, the public, a sizable portion of this community, since day one, since the 1960s, has always fought this road. This has never been a huge groundswell of support for this road.
Well, I think what's fascinating is as you go around the city now, these signs are popping up in yards all across the city. Save McIntyre Park, save McIntyre Park. And as you know, there's a coalition to do just that, the Coalition to Save McIntyre Park. And they're actually holding picnics and rallies and celebrations of this work. The first is June 17th. Then there's one on July 22nd, August 12th at 5:30 p.m. The first on June 17th has Ray Cadell and an all-star musical lineup. John Durth
They're
will be
awesome.
Coming.
Oh, John Durth,
and,
sweet!
And so we're gonna awesome. We want people to come out to the park and help us figure out a strategy for moving forward and protecting McIntyre Park from the desecration of treating it as cheap real estate for buildings or cheap real estate for building roads.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you to put on those headphones, and Andy is waiting patiently on line one. And as we go to the phones, I'll just say, and regular listeners to this program know that I have never been a supporter of the Meadow Creek Parkway. It has never made sense to me, and it has always sort of been the archetypal bureaucratic project, public works project, that just sort of got pushed through from the top down. And never, if you really look at it and study it, has never made sense. Let's go to the phones. We're talking with Dan Bluestone. He's with us this hour on Charlottesville right now. Andy, you're on with Dan. Go right ahead.
Thank you, Coy. I enjoy your show. I just had a question for you. I was wondering which came first, the McIntyre Park or the current 250 bypass that goes borders the park. Did that take any land for the park when it was built?
It did. It went right through that park, didn't it?
In fact, Greenbrier Park is the sort of outlier, the marooned piece of land over there on the edge. And, you know, the listener may know, Andy, McIntyre Park was established in 1926, and the bypass was built in the 1950s. And I think what people who are concerned about McIntyre Park are most troubled by is, haven't we as a community, as people who have grown to appreciate the environment, you have to understand the environmental movement, the ecological movement, the interest in sustainability, all has come after the 1950s, and yet we're still doing planning as if it's the 1950s. And I think that's a shame.
It just seems to me kind of odd, though, that the same issues the Meadow Creek Parkway has going through the McIntyre Parkland is the same as would have been the same argument for not right. building the bypass through, too, because they're doing the same thing.
Well, the question is, Andy, have we learned anything since the 1950s? I like to think that we have, that we've progressed as a society, that we have concerns related to global warming and transportation and sustainability, and that why should we keep duplicating the folly of the highway builders in the city in the 1950s.
It's so funny that you use that word, because that's precisely what it was called at the time, Bowen's Folly, after Jim Bowen. The 250 bypass was his idea, the city planner, and And they referred to it at the time as Bowen's Folly, this 250 bypass. Andy, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. We're going to take a quick break here at the bottom of the hour for local news and weather. More when we get back with Daniel Bluestone and your calls and thoughts about the Meadow Creek Parkway and the future of McIntyre Park. This is Charlottesville right now. It's almost 80 degrees now in central Virginia at 36 minutes after the hour of 4 o'clock. You're listening to Charlottesville right now. News Radio 1070 WINA. I'm Coy Barefoot. Happy Little Friday to you. Hope you're doing well. Thanks for joining me. Let's rejoin our conversation with Daniel Bluestone. He's director of the Historic Preservation Program at the University of Virginia School of Architecture, a professor of architectural history. And Millie will be right with you. Hang on. The phone lines are open at 977-1070. Before we lose sight of this, I just want to say I'm in complete agreement with you that we should bring back McIntyre Day in Charlottesville, especially since the city council already voted on it in 1942. And it's just a matter of it obviously got lost somewhere in the shuffle. And next year being the 150th anniversary of his birth, what a wonderful opportunity. So I am committed to this program. Will definitely get in line behind many others, I'm sure, local groups who would like to see that happen. I think it sounds great. We're talking about the Meadow Creek Parkway here in Charlottesville, and Millie waiting patiently on line one. Millie, you're on with Dan. You go right ahead.
Yes, sir. I know that you have been over to our Stanton Park, Gypsy Hill Park, and you said how beautiful it is.
Gypsy Hill is gorgeous, and every time I go there, I think, why can't Charlottesville have something like this?
You know what you need to do? You need to take those wonderful people who voted for the Meadowbrook Parkway, take them over there, ask the city fathers to let them close the park, let them go 55 miles around that park, and find out how wonderful it is going to be when they fix Meadowbrook McIntyre Park.
Yeah, yeah. And for folks who don't know, it's a very short drive to Stanton and check out Gypsy Hill Park. It is gorgeous. Millie, thanks for the call, and I'm glad you said that because I'd forgotten about it. I go there all the time, and I'm sure you've been there. The bandshell, the playground, the duck pond, the little train for the kids, the fishing lake. I mean, it goes on and on and on in Stanton.
Doesn't sound like a place that would be improved with a highway running through it, but yeah, you never know. Why not give it a try?
Now, let me ask you this, Dan. Everybody makes a big deal about the golf course.
Right.
That McIntyre Park was given to the city for all the city, but somewhere along the way, it became this public golf course.
Right.
And the golfers have won the day. I mean, they are sort of in the driver's seat and have been for decades.
Right.
Despite the fact that so many local folks have said, why can't we make McIntyre Park like a Stanton Gypsy Hill Park with lots of amenities and a wonderful place to take your kids? But then the golfers shake their clubs in the air and say, get back, get back.
Well, Coy, it's something interesting that you raised. This started really in 1932 with a resolution of the Charlottesville City Council. And I've always been struck by this. 1932, Charlottesville is laying teachers off. What would they be doing building a municipal golf course in 1932? You have an answer for that?
I have no idea. And I did not know the golf course was that old. 32.
So there you go. It's maybe more historic than you're willing to admit. But this has always struck me as being interesting. And here's what the case is. This is what the history is. Actually, the city did not build a municipal golf course. The people that built the golf course was a broad coalition of largely business groups in Charlottesville. This golf course is the product of the Chamber of Commerce, the Kiwanis Club, the Rotary Club, the Protective Order of Elks, the Young Men's Business Association, and the Business and Professional Women's Association. They teamed up. They did canvassing within their organization, within their communities, for $25 subscriptions to build this. And their argument in 1932 is that this project would support, the money would go and circulate in the community and help provide a remedy for local unemployment. So it was a kind of private-public depression relief project. And they went and got the leading golf course designer in our region, Fred Findlay, who had already done the design at Farmington. This is known as a Scottish Lynx golf course, where you work with the contours of the land, you leave the pasture and the meadow in condition.
Sand greens, all that, yeah.
Fred Findlay was a Scottish immigrant. He brought that tradition when he moved to Richmond in 1923. And the thing that's quite striking is having these two golf courses in our community. Guess what? Farmington has grass greens, sand bunkers, and 18 holes. McIntyre Park has 9 holes, sand greens, and no bunkers. And the thing is that this was the economy version of golfing, and this gave access in our community to people who otherwise would not have the opportunity to golf. Brought to you by this broad coalition, Kiwanis, Rotaries, Elks, Business Association, Chamber of Commerce. I think if the Chamber of Commerce takes measure of the fact that the road that they're supporting is actually destroying their own club's heritage, their organization's heritage, maybe they'll change their position and help us begin to protect this landscape. Now, there are very, very few sand green golf courses left in the United States. And as a representative of this more common tradition, this affordable tradition of golf, this is one of the reasons this is important. It's historically significant, and we ought to find a way to actually preserve it. Now, having said that, I think that we've been particularly unimaginative about the way of giving more people access to the park. And we can designate days of the week or hours of the day that this could be a great botanical garden, that we could develop it for bandstands and all these other things that you mentioned. It doesn't have to only be used for golf. And we ought to be doing that. We don't need a road to destroy the park in order to make it accessible to the people of Charlottesville.
And for Dan, what do you say to somebody? We're talking with Dan Bluestone of the University of Virginia School of Architecture. What do you say to somebody who says, oh, it's not going to destroy the park? This road,
this is nonsense. All you have to do is go take a walk in that park across the golf course, and you realize that as soon as you move away from Route 250, you're standing in the middle of our city, in the middle of our region, in a quite bucolic and natural setting, and then add 25,000 cars a day to that scene, and you've destroyed the park. There's no question about that.
We're talking with Dan Bluestone, and the phone lines are open, 977-1070. Your thoughts about the Meadow Creek Parkway, 977-1070. I'm struck by the fact, Dan, that historically, since the 60s, the two biggest arguments for the Meadow Creek Parkway have been, number one, we need to save downtown. And if we're going to save downtown Charlottesville, which was really hurting in the 60s when they came up with this, we need to get cars downtown. We need to make it easier for cars to get downtown so they can shop. Because that was right after Barracks Road opened in 1959. They saw what was going to happen on 29. They said the key will be getting cars downtown. Well, they didn't have to get cars downtown to save downtown. As a matter of fact, totally counterintuitive, they closed off Main Street to cars in the mid-70s, and lo and behold, downtown was saved. It's now one of the most popular places to visit, to go out to dinner, to live. They didn't need it for that reason. Number two, they say, we'll have to get cars off of Park Street. So, you know, that's why we need the Meadow Creek Parkway. When in fact, and tell us more about this, don't VDOT's own studies show that the traffic on Park Street will not get any better after the Meadow Creek Parkway?
In court last week, where people are contesting the deeding of land to VDOT with less than a supermajority in the city council, Judge Sweat very incisively picked up on the fact that VDOT's own numbers for the use of Meadow Creek Parkway show declining use of Meadow Creek Parkway. And he said, what's going on here? How could it be that your prediction is there'll be fewer cars on this in 2030 than on the day it opens? The answer wasn't we're going to be using less cars. The answer was the road is going to get so plugged up with traffic that people are going to jump right back to Park Street, and Park Street will be as congested in 2030 as it is today. It's going to be as congested in 2020 as it is today. This, you do not solve this traffic problem by building more roads. The roads just fill up, the settlement patterns adjust accordingly, and the plain fact of the matter is this is not going to solve the problem of traffic on Park Street.
So those are the two biggest arguments we've always heard for the Meadow Creek Parkway. So I'm left wondering, and this is why I've never supported it, I'm left wondering then, well, then why build it? Why build it? If the two biggest arguments for decades have always been those two things,
yeah.
save downtown and get traffic off of Park Street, those don't hold water, either one of them.
Right.
Then why build it?
Is
it just a bureaucratic project?
I don't know that it's bureaucratic. I think there are members of our city council that believe that we need as much business downtown as possible. I think they've underestimated the destructive character of this, not only in terms of McIntyre Park, but in terms of cut-through traffic to the city. The real question is, and this I think the city council needs to think about seriously, if what we're doing is getting people downtown, why are we building a $30 million interchange that's not going to help people get downtown, but help people get to Pantops? Why are we favoring the circulation of traffic from 29 North to Pantops, bypassing our downtown? If you want people to come downtown, we can make a much less expensive interchange that would go right over 250 with no ramps at all connecting to let people go out to Pantops, right? Let's deliver on this. If what we want is people to come downtown, then build a much smaller interchange that just goes right over 250 or even crosses 250 at grade with no left or right turns. Why can't we deliver on what the council says, the majority of the council says they want, which is a road to bring people downtown? Why are we destroying the historic resources in this area by accommodating traffic? And this, as you know, is a long-term problem, and that is the county is constantly wanting city landscapes and city land to absorb the infrastructure for its own growth and development. And that shouldn't be right. If the county is concerned about traffic, let them build interchanges and highways through their neighborhoods rather than taking up parkland and building huge interchanges in the middle of our city with all of its untoward consequences.
We're talking with Dan Bluestone, Director of Historic Preservation at the University of Virginia School of Architecture. Speaking of the historic resources, tell us about the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, which is that would be destroyed, wouldn't it?
Yeah, the plan right now, this is the plan for the mitigation of the impact of the 250 interchange. We're going to hang up two historic markers interpreting the landscapes we're destroying, the Rock Hill Estate Gardens and McIntyre Park, and we'll simply pull those dogwood trees up from the oldest Vietnam memorial in the United States and relocate them. No problem. We'll just, you know, put up memorial trees somewhere else and then saving a little section of the wall for McIntyre Park. There's been a process in place for years now to try to figure out the ways to mitigate the damage of this road to our city. And what we've been told now by VDOT and by the consultants on this case is that we get two historic markers, relocated memorial trees, and the preservation, the saving of a section of the wall, a 5-foot-long section of the wall around the McIntyre, around the Rock Hill Gardens. That's the full extent of the current proposal for mitigating the damage being done by this road to the historic resources, the Rock Hill Estate Gardens, the McIntyre Park, the Vietnam Memorial. Oh, well, we'll just plant new trees.
All of which contributes. Insane. All of which contributes to the reasoning behind the recent APVA announcement that McIntyre Park was one of its most endangered historic sites. Tell us about that, because I saw that and I was like, oh my gosh! I mean, that's very significant.
APVA Preservation Virginia is the nation's oldest statewide preservation organization. They maintain a list of the most endangered historic sites, and I think their reading this year was just about right when they added McIntyre Park to their list of the most endangered historic sites in Virginia. The current developments in our community are aimed straight at McIntyre Park, and they know that its viability as a park, as a historic landscape, is perilously close to being destroyed. And I think their designation is to try to help galvanize and maybe wake up some people that are slumbering through this. And I think that's actually happening already. It's the designation of this as the as an endangered site. There's nothing like the prospect of those bulldozers pulling up behind Charlottesville Stadium and up on Ryle Road to begin to know what's going to happen to McIntyre Park. And that's why all over the city, Signs are going up, Save McIntyre Park, and that's why the Save McIntyre Park Coalition on June 7th, July 22nd, August 12th, starting at 5:30 p.m., is going to be having rallies in McIntyre Park. The first one on June 17th at 5:30 will have Ray Cadell and John Durth and other musicians who are going to be supporting the cause.
Is there a website?
There is SaveMcIntyre.com is one of the websites people can get information.
SaveMcIntyre.com. We're talking with Dan Bluestone and Clara waiting patiently on line one. Clara, you're on with Dan. Go right ahead.
Professors, both of you, you are doing such an outstanding job that I hate to interrupt. But, but thank you, Coy, for your support of McIntyre Park. This is wonderful of you to do this. Please remind people that the interchange that is planned is an elevated, looks like the Tobin Bridge in Boston. It's this elevated, huge, soaring mass, the sound of which will reverberate, can't even talk, I'm so upset, all over the downtown, the poor people who live up behind McIntyre School and all over down that whole area up on Park Street, because the road will be so elevated. Please,
Clara,
Dan, you can explain it better than
I. Well, a good metric. Thank you for the comment. I think a good metric is for people to go to the light at McIntyre Road and the 250 bypass. There's a telephone pole across the road from that. And imagine 250 elevated to the level of 25 to 30 feet above the current site, which gets it to the top of that telephone pole. And that's what this interchange plan does, is to lift up 250 bypass 30 feet into the air, and the Meadow Creek Parkway comes underneath 250 at that point. It's going to devastate in terms of the sound and the view shed of McIntyre Park, the Rock Hill Gardens, the Covenant
School. So for folks who are, Clara, thank you so much
for
the call.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely appreciate it. So for folks who look at current interchanges, like I'm thinking Barracks Road and the 250 bypass, this is three or four times as big as that. It's massive.
Well, this is going to the elevation will be about the same, and that it's just plunking that down in the middle of parkland, in the middle of our city, in the middle of parkland.
Yeah,
it's a frightening thought when you start thinking about it. And of course, all the representations of this, the visual presentations of this, have these aerial views or these perspectives that distort actually what this is going to really be like. Imagine walking under that road, the interchange at 250 in Barracks Road or 250 in Route 29, and imagine what the character of that walk would be like.
Right,
and
right.
It's incredibly destructive of that landscape.
Betty is on line one. Betty, thanks for the call.
Hi.
You're on with Dan.
Thanks.
Go right ahead.
I just have to say I totally agree that this interchange is so inappropriate, and I think even the councilors who support the road maybe will not support this interchange. But the other comment I wanted to make is I'm very excited that there is going to be a candidate running who clearly is going to be against this road, and I believe will have strong leadership, Bob Fenwick. So I didn't know if you'd mentioned that before, but that is something that...
No, I hadn't.
Certainly is going to be campaigning against, and that if we care about this, we should all care about his candidacy.
Bob Fenwick is an important member of the Save McIntyre Park Coalition. He'll be at McIntyre Park on June 17th at 5:30, along with Ray Cadell, John Durth, and other musicians for the Save McIntyre Park rally.
Betty, thank you for the call. We got a lot of folks on the line. Let's go to Malcolm on line one. Malcolm, you're on with Dan. Go right ahead.
Hello?
Yes, go right ahead.
Yes. You don't hear me?
Hear you fine. Absolutely, sir.
This is Malcolm Finley. What I wanted to mention was the fact that when they built Charlottesville High School, they had planned to make a road to school from through the edge of McIntyre Park. And where that road goes down there is an area where there's nothing else used it for. I've been down there several times, and I've never seen anybody down in that area where that road will go through there. And at the place where I have a business, there's a lot of people come there wanting to know how to get to the McIntyre School or to the ball field. And when you try to tell them to get there, they don't believe you're telling them the truth. They said there's no way in the world they could have such a hard way to get to the school.
Imagine our city if Charlottesville High School was still in the old Lane High School building and in the parking lots and fields adjacent. We'd have a very different city that would be more sustainable, more pedestrian friendly, wouldn't be demanding that students show up at high school in cars and increase the automobile congestion.
They used
to
walk to Lane in the old days.
That's right. And it's got plenty of neighborhoods right adjacent to it. And it was literally in the center of our city. How did we ever decide to move the high school out into parkland, out on the edge of the way outside of the center of
Malcolm,
our city?
Thank you so much for the call, and thank you for listening. Let's go to Susie on line three. Susie, got a couple of minutes. Go right ahead. Susie, you're on with Dan. Go right ahead.
My concern is when a person gives land for a specific reason, like Mr. McIntyre did for the park, for the people of Charlottesville and County too, then how can somebody come along and then change that many, many years later to whatever they want it to be? I mean, who would want to give money or land and to have it for a specific purpose to have it changed?
Exactly. I think who's going to want to give land to the city anymore?
It has a chilling effect on people that want to make contributions to the public realm to think that they're just going to disappear because people come up with some different reign. McIntyre gave this land, in the language of the deed is very clear. He gave it in perpetuity as a park and playground, not as a highway.
There you go. Dan Bluestone is the Director of Historic Preservation at the University of Virginia School of Architecture. And again, the website is savemcintyre.com. Dan, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Coy.
Thank you for the calls. A break for CBS News, local news and weather. This is Charlottesville Right Now.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.